On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
I want to go straight to my first guest this morning, the HSE's lead for testing and tracing, Niamh O'Byrne. Niamh, good morning.
Good morning, Gavin.
Thank you very much for taking your call this morning. It's been a couple of weeks since we last spoke to you. Just to get a broad update on where we are right now, can you give us an oversight as to exactly how many COVID-19 tests are being required and generally where we stand as regards the positivity rate at the moment?
Yeah, so at the moment, on a kind of standard Monday to Friday, we're running anywhere between 14,000 and 15,500 tests in our community testing sites. That's our testing sites all the way around the country. And then at the weekends, yesterday was another busy Saturday with 12,000 tests done, which was very similar to last Saturday and the prior. And today, this morning for Sunday, already looks in line with last Sunday. So testing busy, relatively stable, not really exceeding those community volumes of around 15,000. And then in addition to what you have in the community, you have testing going on in your hospitals and private testing. So there still are some days now where we're doing, getting close to 25,000 on a given day.
And how much of that is being driven by people who are presenting themselves with symptoms, or how much of it is people who are close contacts who are being referred onwards?
So quite a lot has been driven by people self-referring. Nowadays in community, we have about 40% of people will book online for an appointment, and then around 30% will walk in. So they're both self-referral. And then after that, you have around 10% GP, and the remainder is referrals from close contacts.
Okay. And then how does that stand then relative in a kind of a long-term comparison? Has that changed much over the summer, or is that really how it's been for a while now?
It's been that for a while, ever since the GPs came back after the referral pathway came back after the cyber incident. They never really reached more than 10%. Obviously, prior to that, the GPs would have been a much higher percentage. But the online channel has been available now for some months and is working quite well. And those people aren't just asymptomatic. You know, they're highly likely to be symptomatic, and in some cases, very high positivity levels from online referral. So it's now really a standard channel.
When you say high positivity rates from people who are booking online, can you give us some insight as to how high the positivity rate is for them?
Well, in some sites, it's up to 33%, which is the highest we saw in recent days, in particular sites just purely coming from an online referral channel, which just tells us that people are using that channel who are symptomatic and who do feel they've been in contact with COVID, which is in that way a good thing that they are using the channel to come forward.
Well, I suppose, yeah, it's good that they're using the system, which is designed to cater to the circumstance. But I suppose the one question that a lot of people will have, and I wonder whether you've got information behind this as a kind of a breakdown, is what percentage of those people are themselves fully vaccinated, or is it the situation where the vast majority of those who are coming forward displaying symptoms are themselves still awaiting a dose?
So we have every day the contact tracers, when they're talking to index cases, they will ask them how their vaccination status, and they'll take the dates of both vaccines. And from that self-reporting, we're finding that somewhere between 20 and 30%, depends on the day, are fully vaccinated. And that that number has been increasing, but we do expect that to increase. It increases in other countries also as vaccination levels increases and disease is still circulating in the community.
So in other words, somewhere between 1 in 5 and 1 in 4 people who are coming forward with symptoms and booking themselves for tests are themselves fully vaccinated.
Yes.
Is that in line with what you would have expected when we set out on this whole journey?
I think it's in line, certainly, what we see in other countries. If you Israel publishes data on this, and on some days they're saying they have about 50% of their fully vaccinated people are COVID positive. We do note in positive terms that people who do report to be fully vaccinated have milder symptoms. But it is definitely something I think we would expect to see rise as we see more vaccination, and we have, as you know, very good vaccination levels in the country.
You mentioned the impact of the cyber attack, and of course, unfortunately, we're now still 3 months on from that attack on the HSE servers, and we still don't have public information being published in the way that it used to be about outbreaks and clusters and where exactly they're being diagnosed. Exactly how prevalent are outbreaks in hospitals at the moment, can you tell us?
There are outbreaks taking place in hospitals, and as has been the case in the past, as community levels rise in the disease, it does go into our hospital systems just like everywhere else. So you see everything on an increase in terms of workplaces, hospitals, nursing homes, everything, pubs, restaurants, bars, they're all on the increase in the last number of weeks.
And are they being driven predominantly by people who are unvaccinated as well in the same proportion as the broader community?
There is a mixture. So in cross-border society, as there are outbreaks, there is a mixture of staff in workplaces who are unvaccinated, perhaps younger and not yet vaccinated. And then there are also people who are coming into the facilities, like customers and guests, who are a mixture of both vaccinated and unvaccinated.
But you'd presume when it comes to hospitals and healthcare settings that even no matter what a person's age is, that if they work there, they would have already had at least been offered full vaccination. So in those instances, it would be people who had declined a vaccine who are now coming forward as index cases.
And potentially, of course, you do also have a lot of movement of staff and new staff coming in, and they're of course prioritised for vaccination as soon as they come forward to working in a healthcare setting.
But I suppose there'd be a lag between those people starting on the job and then getting the protection of a second dose, as the case may be.
Indeed, there may be, but then there's also protocols in place. I think Professor Martin Cormacan may have gone through this last week to just try to explain how the protocols work for healthcare workers who are unvaccinated and rotating them into parts of the facilities which are safer for them to work in.
Mm. Have there been many more instances as diagnosed in those sort of those breakdown figures, which I presume that you and other colleagues have access to, but which haven't been again published yet, about the number of outbreaks or clusters which are arising from outdoor events? Because we've seen, some high-profile concerns in other parts of the world, like in Byron Bay and in New Zealand, where there's been concerns about outdoor transmission. And it was previously perceived that the lion's share, the overwhelming majority of clusters in Ireland, were driven through indoor events. Have there been many more outdoor ones?
There are outdoor in Ireland, but one of the factors we find here is that most outdoor events seem to be also connected with indoor, and it's quite difficult to ascertain where the disease was transmitted, because they're a mixture of indoor and outdoor. So we do have events that are outdoor or situations like sports that are outdoors, but then again, there's a mixture because people travel to the event together or mixing indoors as part of it. So in our country, perhaps driven by our own climate, there seems to be a mixture of indoor and outdoor at any given event.
You mentioned sport there just in passing. Are there some documented examples of there being outbreaks that are linked to sports events?
There are, yes. Just again, like the broad sector of when the virus is increasing in the community, you will find more associated with sport, with clubs, with gyms. So at the moment, it really is quite widespread in between the types of events that we're seeing: more birthday parties, more bars, hotels, golf clubs, gyms, retail, factories, confirmations. And it's just, I think, at the current time, the level of disease that is in the community and the types of events that are now open.
I suppose, Niamh, that there'd be some listeners who might think that there's a case of there being a vicious circle, or that this is a case of chicken and the egg. Because if events are only about as safe as the communities in which they're taking place, then you have a situation where, yes, of course, there might be a risk from some sports matches or some social events, but then those make their community proportionately less safe. And then in less safe communities, more social events then only continue to increase the level of virus that's doing the rounds there. Would you have some concerns that maybe in some communities it's beginning to get a little bit out of hand, or that there's social events happening which are permissible under government guidelines, but which really would not be best advised at the moment?
I think certainly when you look at different counties, you see different positivity levels. And I think it was a really important message through the HSE this week, was that people have to make a personal decision of what's safe for them. They know where they live and they know their own protection, either from the vaccine or from any underlying conditions that they have and the impact of that. So I think from the HSE, our message would be that people need to take a personal decision of what events they attend. And it's not just to take the guidelines as what they can do, but to make the decision themselves based on what they know of their own health and own circumstances.
Do you have any projections as to how much higher the case numbers might be or general positivity rates might be when schools return? Because we know that Delta does tend to affect younger parts of the population a little bit more. And given that, of course, they're the last major chunk of the population which haven't had the benefit of vaccination, there will be some concern that when you start bringing children back into mass indoor congregations, that it's going to result in an increase in case numbers.
So the couple of models that we're following at the moment have a different shape curve than previously, and they're flatter, and they have more sustained periods of time with higher levels of cases. But there is a degree of uncertainty, of course, with the virus. We expect in testing and tracing to be particularly busy at the beginning of September. We note what happened last September when the schools began, because not only do you have potentially COVID circulating, you also have other respiratory viruses is circulating. So what that does to testing is it substantially increases the volume of testing that goes on. Last year, it didn't necessarily have that same impact on the positivity levels. There were a lot of children being tested, but they weren't positive for COVID. Mm. This year, we do go into a school year with more cases at overall in community and more cases, particularly in the rising cases in 13 to 18 year olds. So we do expect to be busy, and we have put supports in between ourselves in the contact tracing side, public health and the Department of Education to support schools as they open.
I suppose, given that you've already said that if people who are themselves presenting with symptoms and booking tests, if they're self-referring and if one in three of them are positive, that means that two-thirds of them have something that are akin to COVID symptoms but which aren't COVID, maybe the likes of a more traditional head cold. And then if you start then introducing schools into the mix, and with the way that head cold spread among children, it means that you're going to have a huge amount for testing very early.
That's what we would expect. We would think usually by the second week in September, and that Monday, we would expect to be very busy in testing sites with more younger people coming forward for testing. Because the highest age group that comes forward at the moment is your young adults, like your 15 to 24 year olds. But that is likely to drop in early September as schools reopen and parents get concerned with a head cold and the same COVID symptoms, and they don't know whether it's COVID or it's another virus.
Do you think broadly, by the way, that there is enough understanding that Delta does present in slightly different ways, that a lot of people still might think that COVID symptoms are the fever and the dry cough that we knew from last year and not the runny nose that might be associated with Delta?
I'm hoping, you know, that people do understand that any of those symptoms, and we do know, because testing access is quite easy, and we know GPs will refer for a broad variety of symptoms that are on the list, people should come forward with any of those symptoms. And it would be an important message too that vaccinated people come forward if you have those symptoms, because we do know you can have mild symptoms as a vaccinated person. So that too is important if people have symptoms, but regardless of whether you're vaccinated, come forward for testing and confirm.
Just finally, before I let you go, Niamh, the last time I think we had you on the programme, you were talking about the idea that in some circumstances, if there were shortages in PCR capacity, that people might be sent antigen tests if they were close contacts, if they were advised to isolate, for example. Has there been much use of that, or have you found any major differences in how many people are reporting positive between the PCRs and the antigens that have been done?
So we're still operating within our PCR capacity at the moment. So in the community sites, they're running around about 15,000. We could probably hit around 20,000. If we consistently get above 18, we would certainly look to introduce antigen testing for close contacts. We haven't quite got there yet, and we're still within our capacity. So we use the kind of gold standard test and stay with PCR. We are using the antigen tests in our pilots. We're running pilots in early years. So that's in the kind of creche type settings, earlier childcare, and also in third level. And as we see the results of those come through, you know, we would look to extend those into those, some of those sectors. But for close contacts, it's kind of a watching brief in terms of what happens with the demand coming forward for testing.
And just briefly on those pilots, exactly what is entailed there? Because if you're talking about early years, does that mean that you're testing some of the children themselves? And does that mean that you're only testing them if they display some symptoms, or are you just testing them all on a blanket capacity, or how exactly is that working?
So how it works is we're not testing children. They're very young, obviously, in that sector. We're testing the staff of the creches and childcare facilities. So they test twice a week, a couple of days apart. And similarly, in education, we will test the students because they're adults, they're over the age of 18, and also the staff. And again, they're asked, they join the programme and they're asked, once they're in the programme, to test with antigen twice a week and report the results to us, both the not detected and the detected.
Okay. I'm sure we'll be talking to you more again in even the coming weeks as the demand for your services might be increasing. But thank you very much for your advice in the meantime. That's Niamh O'Byrne there, who's the HSE's lead for testing and tracing.